Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Our number 1-800-795-9565, 1-800-795-9565. Our poll question up and running, and we'd love to get your feedback on if you could idealistically pick a sport for your son, daughter, granddaughter, niece, nephew, what sport would it be and why? Meanwhile, Kevin has brought in a very special guest to be with us today.
I have indeed. The newly named head coach of the Shikellamy Braves, former Lewisburg head coach Todd Tilford, joining us in studio here today. Todd, thanks a lot for taking some time out and joining us here today.
Sure.
First thing is, you know, being a Shikellamy guy originally, this had to be very enticing to see the position come up and an opportunity to coach the Braves. But you've had so much success at Lewisburg. That also, you know, leaving Lewisburg had to be difficult as well. Talk about the thought process about making the decision to go from Lewisburg to Shikellamy.
Well, being a Shikellamy guy, I guess all along I've always had being the coach at Shikellamy in the back of my mind if the opportunity and the timing was ever right. And, you know, when it did come open, you know, one of my main things, I started looking into it, and I was worried about, you know, if I did go through with it, about having the proper staff to go down there, because I guess, you know, obviously I don't want to go down there all my own. And some of my top assistants, so I have three guys from Lewisburg, if we talked about it, and once they were on board, and, you know, we decided to go ahead and put my name in the hat, and things just kind of fell into place. And so I think fortunate to put together a really good, solid staff down at Shikellamy.
Looking back at what you did with Lewisburg and that state championship run, very, very close to being in that final game a few years ago, how did you find the right players in the right position? I mean, it's not like at the collegiate level where you can recruit guys and find the right guys to fit your style of offense. How did you put the right players in the right place for your offense and defensive schemes?
Well, being a wing T coach, I think that's one of the strong points of the wing T, the way it's evolved over the years. You know, you can do so much stuff with it. And, you know, being up there, you get a chance to evaluate the talent, and basically the wing T, you can change it up year to year, season to season, to fit your personnel. And I think, again, the guys I had, I was blessed to have a great staff up at Lewisburg. And, you know, we had some fun with the kids, and we made it fun for them to come in the summer and to evaluate them. And, you know, I think my staff did a great job of getting the right kids in the right place. And, you know, you asked me earlier about the decision I'm leaving. I mean, Lewisburg's going to be very strong this year. It was a really tough decision. Would have been my 19th season up there. So I didn't expect it. I know when I was looking forward to the Shikellamy job, and when I had to go in and say it to the kids at Lewisburg, I was really emotional time, and really, really difficult, and kind of hit me with all the, I mean, I'm blessed with a lot of great athletes up there that, you know, they worked their butts off for us. And it was just really, you know, really, really made me proud as a head coach to see the kids work and ultimately have some of those good runs. And, you know, like I said, the timing was right. My family, you know, we live in Shikellamy School District, and when it came open, looked into it, and hopefully we can get something going again at Shikellamy like that.
Now, you had said about having a great coaching staff at Lewisburg, and you did, and there was a lot of Shikellamy influence in that coaching staff as well. I know Jim Ermert, former coach at Shikellamy, coming back to Shikellamy, some other guys that are joining you in the Braves uniform this year.
Well, yeah, Jim Ermert, you know, former real good player at Shik and at Temple University.
Yeah, he was okay, yeah.
He'll tell you he was really good. He wants, in fact, he's working on getting our uniforms to be Temple style. That's all he's worried about right now. But he does a great job.
Long look at that one, my friend.
Is that a good idea? I don't know. We'll debate that later.
We like to mess with him on that. But he's just a solid coach and a real good guy and a role model for the kids. And you know, having him on staff, he still has his Braves staff shirts on from, you know, coach with them with the Lewisburg under his stuff. So he's a Shik guy through and through, and he's excited to be back. And Todd West has been my defensive coordinator the last couple of years. He just does an outstanding job of game prep. He's actually a Milton grad and currently lives in Lewisburg. And, you know, once he's on board, we're really excited to have him come down because we give him a lot of responsibility, and he just does an excellent job preparing. Other guys on staff, Mark Schock, Drew Fatula, Mike Hoover, all Shikellamy guys. So I think we have a fun, solid staff together that the kids are really going to enjoy and respect, and give them every opportunity they can to be successful at Shikellamy.
And part of the success is you're going to have to teach. I mean, you have to teach regardless anyway. From year to year, you teach. But this is going to be a teach across the board because not all the chess pieces are in the same spot they were in a year ago. So give us an idea of the challenge of teaching and the enjoyment of the challenge of teaching something, a new system to a team.
Yeah, I mean, it's really exciting for me. I mean, that's the game plan and the X's and O's of teaching it is, you know, what keeps every going and keeps you going as a coach. And, really, really starting from scratch. In fact, you know, we have the weight room running right now. But, you know, the kids that are, you know, still involved in baseball, we got a ton of kids involved in the baseball and track and field season, which, you know, is excellent. You know, we encourage and hope everybody plays three sports, you know, down there. And so from my point of view, we still haven't even met all the kids we're going to have yet. So I hope they finish strong, successful spring seasons. And we're looking forward and to getting out there on the field and seeing what we have to work with.
Is there more pressure on a coach, though, Todd, to teach, especially when at the moment you can't look at players who then, once they pick it up, then start passing it on to the kids around them?
Yeah, well, I mean, the success that, you know, my coaching staff, you know, we had at Lewisburg, you know, part of it, or main part of it, was we had an excellent junior high staff that was content to teach the game at the junior high level. And it was real consistent. And, you know, we have guys, some guys that have been there for 10 years, and they, you know, they would see the kids in the middle school and recruit. So once they were, you know, recruit them to the football program, and once, you know, they would get up to be freshmen and sophomores, you know, they had all the basics. And so we could work with technique and, you know, game planning stuff. And, you know, it's a process, but I think we got the staff in place to do it, and really looking forward to starting here.
Todd, you talked about the offense that you run, being wing T, coming from most of these kids coming up through the Shikellamy system running veer. How much of a change is that going to be, and how challenging is it going to be for this coaching staff to get that change made in the 2 weeks that you have in high school football to get ready for it?
Yeah, well, one thing with the changes in the PIAA, I know Ryan Wetzel sitting here with me was, I hope we got some athletes like him coming through Shik, but the PIAA has opened it up that, you know, there's going to be opportunities for those kids if they choose to, hopefully to get in over the summer. You can do so much more over the summer than when we played or I played, and you know, that's just going to give us the opportunity to get a big head start. And I know there's lots of excitement down there, so I'm sure we're going to see the kids getting in there, getting ready to go.
A little bit off topic, I did get a question texted in to us. It said, I'm supposed to ask you about rooming with Tony Hunt.
Where did that come from? I had a hospital stay there for a little bit, and Tony Hunt was in there for a little bit with me.
I was supposed to ask you about that, so I wanted to make sure I did. You look at the... you look at the players that you have at Shikellamy, and I know you said you and I were talking during the break there and during the news that you had a chance to look at a little bit of film, some of the kids that are coming back in some key positions. How do you think they'll fit into this offense, and how do you think skill set wise you look for the upcoming season?
Yeah, going back to your earlier question, kind of got off topic there about the going from veer to wing T. The main thing is, you know, most of the veer scheme was, you know, some combo and zone blocking where, you know, with the wing T, it's a lot of rules. So that's going to be a big switch for our linemen offensively. I think defensively, you know, we're kind of a similar with an odd front. So I think the transition defense should be a little bit easier. But
what's the one particular team on the schedule that you've seen so far that has you, or is there one particular team, I should say, on the schedule that has you more concerned than anybody else?
Ohio State.
Yeah. Wrong schedule.
I guess focus on our opener with at Mount Carmel. So, you know, at Lewisburg, in the last couple of years, you know, we've faced them two or three times a year. I think, you know, plus we, you know, unfortunately that was ended our season last year at Mount Carmel. So I know Coach DeFrancisco is obviously going to be doing the same things on both sides of the ball. So we have a good idea of what they're going to be doing. So it's actually Not too many people are wishing to play Mount Carmel, but I guess if we're going to play them, I'd like to, you know, that's probably a good spot in the schedule as any to play them. So I think our coaching staff will have an idea of what's going on, and we just got to focus on the kids, get to know the kids, you know, develop that relationship that, you know, the kids see, hey, we're interested in what they're doing, and we're going to be here for them, and we care about them, and, you know, go from there and worry about ourselves. And then once August gets around, then we can worry about going down to the Silver Bowl.
How much more time are you taking this particular summer as opposed to maybe last summer with some of the newer teams that you as a coaching staff haven't seen here moving into the Heartland Conference Division One?
Well, we have a lot of similar opponents on our schedule this year. You know, Jersey Shore, Danville, the big, and Sealands Grove, the three league teams. But, you know, some of our non-league guys, Loyal Sock and Warrior Run, we played at Lewisburg. So we're going to have an idea, and I know I keep saying it, but we just, you know, haven't even met the kids yet, all of them. So we're really in the early stages, and you know, that this summer is just going to be, you know, one of the most important summers for us to you know, lead to some success this season.
Okay, Todd, thanks so much for coming in today. I appreciate it very much. We want to wish you nothing but the best of luck in this, and again, I hope you enjoyed that. That's your pregame show right there, which you're going to get on every week basis.
Hopefully at least 12 weeks anyway.
Sounds good, or more.
Can we go 13? I go 13. I'll be fine with that too, yeah.
I mean, Todd, you ended up with Kevin.
Okay. Well, that was the one part he tried to negotiate in the contract with the school board, but unfortunately it didn't work out in his favor.
And he still took the job anyway.
Well,
hey, we wish you the best. We can't wait to have you on the show a lot during the course of the season so we can get people out to the games, see your team play, because I think you're going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Thank you very much.
All right. Well, we'll come back with more of the Steve Jones Show, Kevin Hurrentow, after this on WKOK. 1-800-795-9565, 1-800-795-9565, parent, grandparent, aunt, uncle. If you could just handpick any sport for your child, grandchild, niece, nephew to be involved in, that to you is just the right way to go based on all the factors, injuries or what the sport can bring or whatever it happens to be. What would it be and why?
Video games count as a sport?
I'm sorry?
Do video games count as a sport? Even if they're sports video games? I just wanted to clarify, that's all.
Tomorrow, just for the heck of it, do the show sober.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
1-800-795-9565. 1-800-795-9565 is the number. Steve Kerr on Grantland.com. Right, and Steve Kerr, who played for Arizona, played in the NBA with the Suns, the Bulls, hit the championship game winner in his career, wrote an article on Grantland.com about the age limit in the NBA, which Kevin and I have strongly come out and agree with the commissioner that it should be 20 years of age and 2 years of college. Now, as of right now, that's not going to happen. It's the Players Association that's blocking it. He gives several reasons why it should be raised to 20. And I want to give you his perspective on Grantland.com because he's been through it all. 24 years he's been involved in the league, either as a player, a general manager, or currently as a TV analyst for TNT. And he actually loves what he's seeing in the league right now. He loves the talent of the league. Style of play is wide open. He says the rules have been successfully tweaked to encourage more movement, scoring, and he thinks the games are being played at a high level, especially if you're the San Antonio Spurs. But when it comes to kids, said there's a collective immaturity that troubles him, especially with some of the league's more talented players. Many enter the league as child prodigies, physically gifted, but lacking any concept of how hard the day-to-day work is or even how the NBA functions as a whole. Here's a true story. I once had an extremely young teammate ask me when our Christmas break was. He then became visibly shocked and saddened after learning we didn't go home for a week or two. Another time, a different player asked how the NBA's playoff format worked. We entered the first round of the postseason. He had no idea what best of five meant. So these were players who were ready to be professional athletes? I don't think so. He said there's a level of immaturity that leads to growing pains. It's why so many young players struggle for a season or two as they adjust to the workload, schedule, travel, stress, and media scrutiny, and especially which seemingly basic off-the-court stuff like managing money, paying bills, and dealing with the pressures of their extended family, a.k.a. entourage. Some have trouble making difficult decisions. See Dwight Howard. Financial costs. The NBA spends anywhere from $50 million to $100 million a year on salaries, plus another few million per year evaluating and developing players. From a scouter general manager, he says, I've only been the latter. He hasn't been a scout. He's been a GM. Seeing a prospect for one messy four-month season of college basketball increases the risk of being wrong about his potential. Remember, talent evaluation is a business in which, in the words of Jerry West, maybe one of the greatest general managers of all time, being right 51% of the time means that you are actually doing well. Having an extra season to assess the potential of college players would cut down on the personnel mistakes that teams inevitably make in the draft, something that could potentially save the league tens of millions of dollars every year. Not only that, it also gives those players a benchmark in that second league of whether they should or should not go. He says, of course, the extra season pushes the money-making table back. For NBA rookies drafted in the first round, there's a four-year contract scale. After that, they become free agents and eligible for much more lucrative deals. Had LeBron James not been allowed in the NBA until he was 20, his first max deal would have happened when he was 24, not 22, and his second one would have happened at 28, not 26, which, by the way, would be this year. He said, do you think Tim Duncan or Ray Allen ever looked back at their career and said, man, I wish I'd skipped college and gotten max contracts earlier? They both have awesome careers, and they're both four-year college players. Player development. Said, why would NBA franchises assume the responsibility and financial burden of a player development? Once upon a time, colleges happily assume that role for them. He says, not only that, he says they learn how to deal with the media scrutiny, how to handle game pressure, even how to handle success and failure under a pretty sizable spotlight. He says, by the time they were drafted, they were ready to succeed at the highest levels and compete for titles immediately. Bird and Magic won eight of the league's next nine championships after they entered the league in 79. Jordan won seven scoring titles and three NBA titles in his first 9 years. All three arrived immediately as rookies. Bird, awesome stats. Celtics lost in the Eastern Finals after being terrible the year before. Magic Johnson, Finals MVP, they won it. Awesome stats. Jordan, lost opening round. But at the same time, had awesome stats, and of course we know what he went on to be. Meanwhile, Kevin Garnett, mediocre stats, 10.6 boards a game, Minnesota misses playoffs. Kobe Bryant, these are high school players. Kobe Bryant, 7.5 points, 2 rebounds a game. Lakers lost in second round. Kobe famously firing 2 air balls in the last minute of the final loss. Dwight Howard, 12 points, 10 boards, impressive up to a point, but Orlando misses playoffs. LeBron James, great numbers, but Cleveland misses the playoffs. Marketing. NBA, of course, they use the marketing tool. Sense of team. There is no sense of team. There's a sense of individual. One of the great running jokes of all time, of course, has been about Michael Jordan, that Dean Smith was the only man that kept Jordan under 20 points a game. But what Dean Smith really did was making Jordan pay his dues, share the ball, teaching him how to be a good teammate, how to work, and most important, how to deal with success and adversity. Did MJ's experience at North Carolina help make him a champion that he became in the NBA? Even if there's no way to prove it, I believe, Steve Kerr says, the foundation and guidance Dean Smith provided ended up being a big reason for Jordan evolving into the great player he was. In fact, Michael even admits, saying many times, that Coach Dean Smith was one of the biggest influences on his life. The relationship remains important to Michael Jordan to this day. Doesn't that mean something? He goes on and on and on about this. I mean, Jordan left with a year remaining, but he stayed 3 years. Stayed 3 years. That old running joke, he was the one guy that kept him under 20 points a game. You notice on two of the three championship-winning shots, one by John Paxson and one by Steve Kerr, Jordan passed them the ball. Jordan didn't take the shot because at North Carolina, Jordan was taught team basketball. Do you expect Carmelo to pass that shot up? Nope, but we talked, but ESPN talks more about Carmelo Anthony than any other player for a team that is 1-13 in their last 14 playoff games. When's the last time they talked about the Spurs? Oh, that's right. They aren't a soap opera. They just play good basketball. Somebody who does a great job with the news, our Sarah Bartlett. Her news is next as we continue on WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
1-800-795-9565. That's 1-800-795-9565. We've been bringing up several topics today, one of which was on SteveJonesShow.com about what sport would you pick for your child, grandchild, niece, or nephew if you could handpick it yourself based on all the risk factors and enjoyment factors. We go to Nori next. Hi, Roger. Thank you for waiting, and you're on the show.
The reason I'm calling
because he's bulls of it.
Well, I wanted to tap into your encyclopedia-like mind. I think one of my favorite players growing up was a guy named Phil Chenier. Do you remember Phil Chenier?
Phil Chenier played guard dive for Washington and was a critical part of the Bullets championship against the Seattle Supersonics in the late 70s.
Right, and Phil Chenier was considered a hardship pick. That's what they called those types of picks back then, a hardship pick. And maybe you can even tell me, I think they had a round in the draft just for those picks. Like I think Phil was a relatively high pick in 1971, but he wasn't picked in the same draft that Austin Carr and Sidney Wicks and some of the other players from that year were picked. I think there was a round just for hardship picks. And just the name hardship would tell me that there had to be some proof of economical stress or what have you to qualify to play in the NBA at that time. And he's the one that stands out as the first one who really turned into something in the NBA, you know, coming right into the NBA with no college. And, you know, can you make a case still for, you know, if you get somebody that has to be a breadwinner, has to go out and help mom feed brothers and sisters, has to help put a roof over, you know, the heads of his parents and his siblings, how do you tell that kind of person that you can't go make a living if what you happen to do is play basketball? Maybe you don't have the luxury of waiting 2 years and going through college. Maybe your family needs that money now.
That's a very good question, and the way I would answer it is this. I think that the NBA as a business has to make its decisions on what makes its business thrive and not just about the individual player. That player still would have the option of coming out of high school, for example, and making money and playing ball in Europe because they don't have the same rules as the NBA does. They can do that if they wish. But the NBA as a business has to make its decision of what makes the product better. Do I think the product has become better just in making the rule go from high school to 19 in the year of college? Yes, because I think the NBA has become a slightly more mature and smarter league because of it. As you know, we've talked about Carmelo Anthony as an example. He came out after 1 year at Syracuse. But, you know, he still came out as an immature player in some ways. And he has not really, you know, he's thrived financially in the NBA. But there's probably 20 to 25 guys who I picked. Now, Phil Chenier came out in the time of the Spencer Haywood rule, which was the challenge to get them into the NBA. And while I see your point about being the breadwinner and so forth, I think still going to college, I think, and finding out in 2 years whether you are actually yourself capable of making the move is in the long run better for you than just jumping in from high school and then finding out you can't and then suddenly you have nothing and don't have the breadwinning capability that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just threw that out there.
It's a great topic, and I feel strongly about the fact. I've always thought it should be 20, Roger, with 2 years. And the reason I thought it should be 20 in 2 years is not for the college game and not really for the NBA game. I think you get a better evaluation in 2 years for the personal player themselves to sit there and say, am I ready or not? You know what? Maybe I should stay another year after this because I'm not quite ready yet. And along the way, you're getting your degree, which if it doesn't pan out, still allows you to have a future with a degree behind you. And that's one of the things that's important that we talk about with college football. The rule in college football, by the way, is 3 years since your graduation of your high school. So if you're a pure junior or a redshirt sophomore, you can go into the NFL draft, but you still have to wait to do that. And when you see graduation rates of 88% and so forth, like Penn State has in the recent result that came out yesterday, 88%, those 88% now at least know that they've gone through, backed up with a degree, and they have some sort of future outside of football.
Sure. All right, Steve. Points well taken.
Thanks, Roger. Great question. Our number, 1-800-795-9565, 1-800-795-9565. And you have to make that decision in every level of business across the country. You have to make that decision. And maturity is also important, an important part of the decision. In doing, let's take something like this. Do you want, for example, an 18-year-old kid doing it? You might. An 18-year-old kid doing a show. Or do you want somebody that's old and grizzled like me? No, but at least it's been around the block a couple of times.
I prefer experienced.
Yeah, I mean, you have to make those decisions in the business world all the time. Do I want, for example, an 18-year-old salesperson, or I want somebody that understands the market, understands what to do? Same thing in basketball. You may know how to play the basics of basketball, but I'll give you an example, and I am not going to name either player here, okay? I'm not going to name either player, but this goes back to the ABA. The ABA season ended. And this guy had been a hotshot high school player who went to the ABA. And actually, to this young player's credit, understood how to play the game and was actually a good player. Immature, but still a good player in his rookie year, and actually went on to have a really good career. One of the other players lived in his home state, drove him back, drove the 18-year-old player back. They went to a restaurant. The young player couldn't order, couldn't read. Had to be taught to read. Now, this is the same one that's trying to put food on the table, is trying to balance a personal budget, pay bills. It's a lot to put on an 18-year-old. And again, I think you get a better evaluation by that second year. It will give the league a better evaluation on you. It gives you a better evaluation also personally about where you are and where you need to go with your game, or if your game is ready. Our number is 1-800-795-9565. That's 1-800-795-9565. We're kind of taking the tour here so far today, talking about, for you, if you could handpick a sport for child, grandchild, niece, nephew, what would you handpick for them? That's the poll question on SteveJonesShow.com. And also the Grantland.com article that was brought up by Steve Kerr about why he feels that the 2-year and 20-year-old thing would actually be important in a lot of ways. Magic Johnson did play 2 years at Michigan State. He did not leave after his freshman year. He left after his second year. Larry Bird went a full career at Indiana State. Michael Jordan left after 3 years. It's interesting, though, that while I think everyone assumes that Kobe Bryant came out of high school and was a great NBA player, he only averaged 7.5 points a game his rookie year. He only averaged 7.5 a game. And when the Lakers lost in the playoffs, he had the two critical air balls. It's just a question of growing up and being more mature. So even those that we consider to be among the marquee, I think Kobe Bryant's been, to me, the best player I've seen in the NBA. I remember when the 2008 Olympics came up in China, the one player I felt needed to be on that team was Kobe Bryant. Not LeBron James. You know, and believe me, you want LeBron James on there. But if I had to pick one and then start and then work down, he, to me, was the priority player. But even he had to grow into being that priority player. Even Kevin Garnett had to grow into being that priority player. They were again, kids at the time. LeBron James came out to his credit, I think, did the best he could, but they didn't make the playoffs either. Meanwhile, the other people we're talking about, albeit Hall of Famers, I mean, look at the guys that have been pivotal to winning championships in the NBA. Look at the guys that have been pivotal to winning championships. Okay? Bird. Played all 4 years at Indiana State after transferring from Indiana. Okay? Magic. Played 2 years. And when he went, and after 2 years went to the NBA, you know, it didn't hurt that he had Kareem with him. No doubt about that. But still, was, you know darn well he was ready to play. And they won that final game against Philadelphia. And Kareem didn't play because of migraines. And Jordan played 3 years. He played 3 years at North Carolina before he came out and finally felt he was ready to play in the big league. And those are certain things I'm not so sure that the I think there's a lot of revisionist history that happens. Remember I talked the other day about sports mythology? There's a lot of mythology in sports. And I just brought up one of the myths. I think people just assume Magic Johnson came out after his freshman year. I think people assume Michael Jordan came out right away. They assume that Kobe Bryant had great success out of Lower Merion High School into the NBA. They assume Kevin Garnett had great success right away and didn't. Our number, 1-800-795-9565. That's 1-800-795-9565. Final segment of the Steve Jones Show on WKOK after this. I realize there are obviously right-to-work laws in the country, which are cited all the time, but that doesn't mean they have to be forced to hire you. Our number is 1-800-795-9565. That's 1-800-795-9565. There are all sorts of reasons why. It's amazing that when you look at the NBA and who's won championships over time, it wasn't until Kobe got a little bit older, more mature, became the player he is. You know, the most successful players over the years have been among the elite. And then, for example, Larry Bird went all the way through. Tim Duncan. Nobody talks about the great Tim Duncan. Nobody talks about the San Antonio Spurs, for goodness sakes. I mean, if you ever torture yourself by listening to ESPN radio, and believe me, it's like being on a rotisserie spinning round and round. When's the last time you heard Stephen A. Smith or Colin Cowherd or any of them sit there and talk about the San Antonio Spurs? Win. All they do is win championships and keep their mouths shut and play basketball. And Tim Duncan is one of the truly great players that this league's produced. He's one of the, in the last 15 years, he's one of the top five players. I'd take him before I'd take number seven with the Knicks. I mean, they win one playoff game against Miami. All the, you know, the guys at ESPN are all, you know, want to give him a parade through the canyon. Like, meanwhile, San Antonio wins. The Spurs, by the way, the older Spurs, and we'll have to find out whether they have enough stamina to get them through three more rounds. because that'll enter into it. But they're 25-2 of their last 27 games.
Steve, maybe this is why ESPN doesn't talk about the San Antonio Spurs. The last two times in 03 and 07 in the championship, NBC had it 1 year in ABC had it both years. It was a 6.2 and a 6.5, two of the lowest ratings since 1976 in television for the championship game.
Yeah, but isn't it their? I think it's their job to talk about who are the legitimate people that can win the title.
I understand what you're saying.
I mean, the New York Knicks are not a legitimate title contender. The New York Knicks aren't even one of the top 10 teams in the league.
Well, the point I was going to make beyond that is the Bulls, since 1998, no one has really gone to the NBA in full force to watch the championship game. I mean, the Lakers, Celtics, Mavs, Heat last year, probably they were the only ones in the last almost 20 years that got double figures in NBA ratings. Right. At least in the last 10 years, it got double figure Nielsen numbers.
And look at the Celtics, for goodness sakes. Look how they're built. Okay, Garnett was a high school player, but they got Garnett later in his career. Right? Pierce played 3 years at Kansas. Ray Allen played all 4 years at UConn. And I will be frank with you, I don't know how far Rondo went in school. I mean, Rondo was not an early entry, I know that, out of Kentucky. Look how those are the four primary players the Celtics have. In fact, Pierce may have been a four-year player at Kansas. I think Pierce was a four-year player at Kansas. I know Ray Allen was a four-year player at UConn. Garnett really, they got a very mature Kevin Garnett at the end. But they are a team built with guys that are older.
Steve, who would be the oldest NBA star right now in your mind?
The oldest?
Yeah, I mean, who's been around the longest in the NBA?
Oh my goodness, I don't know. I would say the oldest star that I would put a star tag on is probably Duncan.
And the reason I'm asking you is you talk about these guys coming out early, but how many of them end up lasting as long as some of the other players that are more well-known in the NBA, and in especially when you look at back in the 90s with Chicago? Right. I mean, my point is I think part of the reason the NBA ratings were where they were the last decade or so is because there's really nobody you can get behind because they don't seem to be around as long.
Rondo, by the way, came out after his second year at Kentucky. He played 2 years. He came out at 20 years old.
And the fact that they do come out early, is that why they're not around as long?
This league runs through them. The league has been drafting on potential for a long time. I take you first overall. I know you just came out of high school, but you did something in Europe, but based on the potential, because a lot of Europeans have been drafted. The NBA draft is not like the NFL draft. I mean, Andrew Luck goes all the way through, has a body of work you can at least judge from. Trent Richardson still had, 1 year of eligibility remaining, but you still had a body of work to judge from. He was at Alabama, the last 3 years. And on we go. I mean, the number of guys that are early entries versus going all the way through, at least you have a full body of work to choose from in college when making your NFL selection, right? The NBA has had very few guys where they've had full bodies of work to make the selection. One of them was Tim Duncan. I mean, Rick Pitino staked everything he had when he went to the Celtics on that he was going to get that first pick, and he didn't. He ended up with the third and the fifth pick, and he picked Antoine Walker and he picked Ron Mercer. But Duncan was the guy. And Duncan played 4 years, and he was absolutely positively ready because the Spurs were terrible when he joined them. And then the Spurs, of course, added in Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili. Ratings-wise, you make an interesting point about the ratings.
Mm-hmm.
But why is it that the 10th best team in the league, with Amari Stoudemire, has never won anything in his career? He's never won anything in his career. Melo, at least in his freshman year, won the NCAA championship with Syracuse. And he didn't go to the NBA right away. He was a year at Syracuse. Okay. But these guys haven't won much of anything. The Spurs, Manu, Tony Parker, Duncan, not sexy, not household names. Guess what? They're the best team. And I would take all three of those players before I took either Melo or Stoudemire. Because they know how to play. Now, I want to point out, though, so people realize I'm not being unfair here. I think the Miami Heat play excellent team basketball. I know they have a lot of stars, but they are probably the best defensive team and know how to translate defense into offense better than any team in the NBA. But when it comes to the Knicks, they are over-talked, over-hyped, and a ridiculous subject, and they're wasting people's time. We don't waste people's time here.